This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. For so many people who come to this country in search of a better life, the transition to this whole new world can be really difficult. It's especially true for kids. Learning a new language, finding a new culture, making new friends. Ruth Behar explores many of these themes in her own writing. She's a poet, an author of children's books, and also a professor of anthropology at the University of Michigan. In 2018, she brought us a prize-winning YA novel, Lucky Broken Girl, a coming-of-age story that draws a lot from her own childhood as a Cuban Jewish immigrant. The book Letters from Cuba, published in 2020, also centers on belonging, identity, and the preservation of Cuba's Jewish history. And then last year, Behar stepped into picture book territory with a title for smaller kids called Tia Fortuna's New Home. Her latest picture book is called Pepita Meets Bebita. It takes a slightly different turn, being co-authored with her son, Gabriel Fry Behar, a filmmaker, writer, and photographer. We've got you both with us today. Ruth, Gabriel, welcome both of you to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having us. This is great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I wonder if we could just start with Pepita Meets Bebita. First of all, I have to say, Gabriel, I know you have little ones at home, and I got to say, this family and their dog, was this at all inspired by your own crazy domestic situation right now?
It definitely was, and my mom can talk a lot about it too, because, you know, we were all kind of cooped up together after the birth of my now older daughter, Mila, and she, you know, she was kind of like developing and starting to find her way as like a newborn, and then ultimately starting to crawl around the house. And my wife and I, before we had kids, we had a dog, which was really like, in a sense, our first kid. And we started to notice that she was like confused, a little like curious, and ultimately really excited. But that moment of like initial confusion seemed really, in a funny way, very human of her. And then that became kind of an inspiration for my mom and I to start to write the book.
You know, I love that you two thought to collaborate on this, because I think kids wonder a lot. You know, they tend to think of the animals in the family as definitely a part of the family, maybe even as quasi-siblings. Ruth, could I ask you to read a little bit from the book for us?
Oh, of course. I'd be happy to. And I have to just add that I experienced this too, because the dog, the real dog, whose name is Eloise, was a rescue dog. And I was there when Gabriel and his wife first brought her home. So I also felt very connected to Eloise, who became Pepita in the story. So
she's your grand dog.
She's my grand dog.
Yeah, that's right.
My eldest grand doggy. I'll start from the very beginning. I'm Pepita. I'm the baby, the Bebita of the family. My mommy and papi spoil me with treats and tummy rubs and my favorite fluffy pillow and cariño. But lately, things have been changing. Mommy's tummy has grown as big as my fluffy pillow. Papi is busy painting and building all kinds of things. When abuela and abuelo come over now, they forget to bring me treats and toys. In the spring, they bring a hand-woven blanket, para el frío, abuela says. In the summer, they bring an azabache, para la buena suerte, abuelo says. In the fall, they bring a stack of containers of frijoles negros, picadillo and plátanos. You won't have time para cocinar, abuela says. One winter morning, mommy holds her tummy. The baby is coming, she exclaims. Apúrate, she calls out excitedly to papi. Did I hear mommy right? I'm the baby and I'm right here. They give me a big kiss. We love you, Pepita. Just like that, they run off without me.
Oh.
And then you have to read the book to find out what happens
next.
and
the book is beautifully illustrated by Maribel Lechuga. It's really gorgeous. Can I ask you two, Ruth, maybe we could hear from you first. What was it like to work together? Of course, Gabriel is in New York now, and you're here in Ann Arbor. How did you do it?
Well, we started. I was in New York actually when we got the idea to collaborate on this book. So we started working on it, you know, face to face, and then just by phone and email and Zoom and FaceTime and, you know, just back and forth drafts. And because Gabriel is my son and I adore him so much, it was fine when he said, "Take this line out," or "I don't like this," or "Let's do it this way." You know, it was something that it's like I thought, yeah, I think he's right. And since he comes from a filmmaking background, he had a really good idea of words that didn't need to be there, that the things could be shown through the art. So I think we were a good team.
I was always terrified getting edits from my parents, but it's got to be a different experience getting edits from your kids.
It sure is. But it worked out. Gabriel has read my writing for a long time. You know, before we collaborated on this book, I'd often show him things I was writing over the years. So I always looked up to him as an editor and as a reader. And he shares work that he's doing on his own as well with me. And so I think we have a really good relationship as fellow writers.
Gabriel, how is the younger one and the pup doing now?
Everybody is getting along. It is funny now that we have a second kid. Our older daughter Mila now really thinks of herself as, like, obviously the kind of like adult in the room. And she thinks of our dog Eloise as her dog, of course, and then also the baby Colette as her baby. So now she has her own kind of like family that she's starting as like the sub family of, you know, our family. But yeah. And then, I mean, going back to what my mom said too, like I've always loved reading her writing, you know, from when I was a kid. And we've joked also, cause people have asked us like, how is it working together? Like, mother, son. And there's definitely people in, you know, in any family that you'd have a hard time working with potentially. But like the two of us, we're, you know, for whatever reason, we're very in sync almost always. So like when one of us suggests an edit, the other one really listens, thinks about it, and then almost always agrees. And then whenever there's like creative tension or a difference of opinion about something, I think we're really good at figuring out like what is the ultimate kind of storytelling goal. And then how do we combine what we're individually seeing into something that's unified and together.
That's pretty unusual to find in any professional collaboration.
Yeah, I think because it's actually been such a long collaboration between us. Many, many years ago, I made a documentary in Cuba, and Gabriel was about 12, and he filmed some scenes that ended up in the film. So I think we've just been, like, as you said, I love that term, in sync. I think we've been in sync with each other for a long time on creative projects. And as you said, I'm also an anthropologist, and so Gabriel got schlepped along to Spain, to Mexico, to Cuba, all the places where I was doing research. And so I think we just, you know, got used to being together in all kinds of situations.
Gabriel Fry Behar, we're going to let you go and talk a little bit more with your mom. But thank you for checking in with us. And we wish everybody under your roof a very good rest of October.
Thank you so much.
And if you're just joining us, my remaining guest is Ruth Behar. She is the author of several books for young people and also a published researcher in her own right as a professor of anthropology at the University of Michigan and a poet. Ruth, people may have gathered from that excerpt from Pepita and Bebita, this is a bilingual book. Did you set out to write in that way?
Absolutely. We really wanted it to be bilingual. I was born in Cuba. I grew up speaking Spanish. My parents, fortunately, are still alive. We speak in Spanish every day. It's the language of home. And it's the language that Gabriel grew up hearing as well. Gabriel, by the way, was born and raised in Ann Arbor. So he grew up hearing Spanish right here in Michigan from me. And then we would often go to New York to visit my parents in Queens. And so they always spoke in Spanish to him. And in the family, we spoke Spanish. So bilingualism was just something very much a part of our family, and we wanted to really celebrate that in this book and to incorporate the Spanish into the text so that a child who's a Spanish speaker could go, great, here, I recognize myself, and then a child who doesn't speak Spanish could learn these words and can learn these phrases. So it had that double purpose.
Right. For those who maybe are less familiar with your stories, can you share a little bit of the history of Jewish communities in Cuba?
Absolutely, yes. So the Jewish community really begins in Cuba at the turn of the 20th century after the Spanish-American War. And the first Jewish people to live openly in Cuba as Jews were actually American expatriates who moved to Cuba in the early years of the 20th century and opened up stores and businesses there. And then subsequently, interestingly, the Jews of Europe found their way to Cuba largely from Poland and Turkey. And they went to Cuba because they couldn't get into the United States. The United States established a quota system.
I read some of your book, Letters from Cuba, and I knew a little bit about your family's history and Sephardic Jews in Cuba and was surprised to find the protagonist is Ashkenazi. Her family lives in Poland before they before they come to Cuba. It sounds like an interesting mix within the Jewish community.
Absolutely. And so I'm a product of that mix. My mother's family is Ashkenazi from Poland and Russia. My father's family is Turkish of Sephardic Spanish ancestry. And those two communities found their way to Cuba in the mid-20s into the late 30s. And they went to Cuba precisely because the United States had closed the door to Southern European and Eastern European immigrants. But Cuba was open at the time. So these Jewish immigrants thought, great, we'll go to Cuba and then we'll find our way to the United States. It's so close, we could practically swim over. And that's what they thought. And many did do that. Many used Cuba as a kind of trampoline to then enter the United States. But then there were the other Jews that found their way to Cuba that fell in love with the island. And that was the case with my family. They just loved Cuba. They thought they had found their promised land there in that tropical island. And so they were there until the revolution, until the Castro revolution in 1959. Like many others, they left in the 60s, like thousands who left then because they lost their businesses, they lost their means of livelihood, and then restarted their lives in the United States, largely in Miami and New York.
I feel like Cuban Americans in this country are often viewed by outsiders from the community as really homogenous, you know, that people who came over because, you know, because they lost businesses and were boosters of a kind of life in Cuba that was on the way out. But in just even one book, there's so much greater depth of people's experiences. Are there some things that you found when you came to the States and started writing about your experiences later that people thought that weren't necessarily true?
Mm. Well, you know, Cuba's a very, very diverse country, and I think people sometimes don't realize that. There's a very important Afro-Cuban influence in culture and the music and the language, you know, and the traditions and the religion. It's all very, very important, and it's had an impact on everybody in Cuba. So in a sense, everybody who's Cuban is a little bit Afro-Cuban. That's how I think of myself. Mm-hmm. And then there were also Chinese Cubans, a very large population of Chinese Cubans, and then immigrants from all over Europe and, of course, all over Spain. So all of that was part of Cuba. And I think people have a certain maybe stereotyped idea of what Cuba's like, right? And what it was like before the revolution, when it was kind of a tourist mecca, largely for Americans, and then what it became after the revolution. And so people expect to go to Cuba and like find like revolutionaries like on every corner, you know. And it's of course much more complex than that. So I know that I've often had to explain, especially when I first arrived in the United States, I often had to explain my identity to people. People would say, how can you be Jewish and Cuban? Do you have one Jewish parent and one Cuban parent? I would say, no, they're both Jewish, but in different ways. You know, one parent comes from a Turkish background. The other one comes from a Polish background. But they're Cuban. And, you know, if you meet my parents and don't happen to know that they're Jewish, you would just think of them as Cuban because they're so incredibly Latino in the way they think of themselves and, the way they speak Spanish, the way they prefer to watch TV in Spanish. They prefer to get the news on Univision, you know, than on CNN. I mean, they're just like so much into that culture, that Latinx culture. And I think that's something that people might find surprising.
You were born into a multicultural society in Cuba, and your family came to another multicultural society, the United States. At the same time, you know, you're part of a literary tradition as having Jewish identity. that has so much to say about travel and emigration and ways of belonging within cultures and subcultures at the same time. When you sit down and write about these characters who, you know, again, sometimes are just little girls and sometimes older people, what's on your mind about how people are meant, are made to feel as others? Even in a culture that they may feel very much at home in.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have that mix of feeling both at home and being a stranger sometimes, like, you know, in the places where we live. I think that happens all the time. I think in creating these characters, I want to see how they learn to coexist with people of different backgrounds. So in Letters from Cuba, as you mentioned before, this is a Polish-Jewish girl who's migrating to Cuba in 1938, inspired by my maternal grandmother. She's gone by herself. She has to go find her father, who is there in Cuba already, and help to bring the rest of the family, you know, to safety in Cuba. She gets there. They meet up. They go and live in the countryside where my mother's family actually lived. And there she encounters cultures that are completely new to her, coming from Poland, an Afro-Cuban culture, a Chinese-Cuban culture, a Spanish Catholic culture. And she has to find a way to be part of that, right, while still holding on to who she is as a Jewish girl. And I'm really interested in those kinds of interactions and how we can get to know each other respectfully and really enjoy each other's traditions while still being aware that we have our own traditions. And that's what I tried to create in that book, you know, where my character, Esther, you know, gets to hear the bata drums, and the bata drums are played in Santeria rituals in Cuba to this day. They're very important. They're three drums, large, medium, and small, that are played, and you hear them, and they really bring you into kind of a spiritual state of mind. And so she hears those drums and it kind of changes her. She, you know, she talks about that, how the drums, having heard the drums and the way they're summoning the spirits and so on, all of that changes her. It's not her tradition, but she gets into it and immerses herself in it.
She's becoming Cuban
or yeah. She's becoming an anthropologist.
Yeah.
You know, kind of both. And so that's what I wanted to show. And the same, you know, in Lucky Broken Girl, my character Ruthie, based on me, you know, she's surrounded by her family, her Cuban Jewish family, but also people of many, many different backgrounds and different faiths, you know, and two Indian brothers who live, you know, next door to her. A friend from Belgium, then a neighbor, you know, comes from Mexico, and she's surrounded by all these people with different ways of looking at the world, right? But they all enrich her in some way and make her kind of understand the world much better.
Ruth Behar is the author of several books for young-ish readers, or the young at heart. Mm-hmm. There is the YA book Lucky Broken Girl. There is Letters from Cuba, also intended for maybe middle grade readers or a little bit older, and the picture books Tia Fortuna's New Home and Pepita Meets Bebita, most recently. Ruth, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Your books are really, really fun.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you. Thanks for all your great questions.